Imagine boarding a bus or a train knowing that your destination was a total mystery. The only thing you've been told is that your work there will help end World War II and that everything will be taken care of for you. This was the case for thousands of young women who were recruited by the U.S. government in 1943 to serve the top-secret Manhattan Project. They came from all across the East Coast and South, from Alabama to western Pennsylvania to New Jersey, to tiny towns like Clinton, Tennessee. It turned out their destination was Site X, or Oak Ridge, a secret city that appeared on no maps. The individuals who worked there, though they had no idea at the time, were enriching uranium for the first atomic bomb used in combat. In the new book, The Girls of Atomic City, Denise Kiernan shares the true story of these remarkable, hardworking, determined young women and the crucial role that they played in one of the most significant moments in U.S. history. Again, the name of the book is The Girls of Atomic City, and it's a pleasure to welcome Denise Kiernan to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
What brought you to these women and to this story of Atomic City?
I stumbled across it, really. It was kind of dumb luck. I was actually researching another project and came across this beautiful, beautiful vintage photo. It was black and white. I later learned it was taken by Ed Westcott, who was the official photographer of Oak Ridge during World War II. And in this picture were these young women, just in 1940s hairstyles and dress, and they were perched on these stools in front of these gigantic panels covered in all these knobs and dials and gauges, and in this enormous room, and the accompanying text said something to the effect of, "These young women, many of them recent high school graduates from rural Tennessee, are enriching uranium for the world's first atomic bomb, only they didn't know that at the time." And I was completely floored because I'd never heard this story before. And at first I thought it was just kind of a knowledge gap on my part. I thought, oh, well, maybe everybody knows this and I'm just the one who missed out. But sure enough, whenever I talked to other people about this and felt some people out, everybody seemed to have the same view of the Manhattan Project that I had had up until that point, a very sort of top-down view that it was all about Robert Oppenheimer and Enrico Fermi and General Groves and Los Alamos, New Mexico, always sort of from the perspective of people in the know. And pretty much everybody I talked to didn't really know much about these thousands of people, many of them young women, who worked in eastern Tennessee on the Manhattan Project. So I found out that it was only about 2 hours' drive from my house, so I hopped in the car and went to go check it out.
It is one of the things that surprised me in the book was the geographic reach of the Manhattan Project, because as you mentioned, so many of us think of just Los Alamos, New Mexico, but this had quite a geographic reach, and of course you focus specifically on Oak Ridge, Tennessee.
I do. In fact, there were three main sites for the Manhattan Project during World War II. Hanford Engineer Works, which is in Washington State, Los Alamos, which is, of course, the site that most of us are familiar with, and Oak Ridge in eastern Tennessee, about 25 miles outside of Knoxville. And in fact, there were a number of other sites across the United States that contributed supplies or research to the project itself, places like UC Berkeley and the Metallurgical Lab in Chicago and Ames, Iowa, all sorts of spots. But Oak Ridge was the administrative headquarters for the entire Manhattan Project and was also the most populous of all the Manhattan Project sites. And this is something I think very few people realize, that it was not just an important – I mean, it was where the majority of the money for the project was spent. It was the headquarters.
As we mentioned in the introduction, these women didn't know what they were doing. After the project was completed, how much did they know? Were they able to fill in the blanks?
That's a great question. And here's how it kind of played out. The majority of people, not just the women, but the majority of people who worked on the Manhattan Project did not know what the scope of the project was. So when the purpose of the project was revealed, and that was on August 6, 1945, when the first atomic bomb used in combat detonated over Hiroshima, Japan, the first bit of information that they realized, thanks to President Truman's address, was that Oak Ridge, the town, played a significant role in this because Truman mentioned the town by name. So one secret was revealed, the fact that this is what Oak Ridge had been working on, all the imagining that they did and the wondering and the guesses. Now they knew this whole time that this vast reservation was working somehow on this new bomb that had been just used. However, the intricate processes that were involved in that were not directly explained to people. So, for example, one of the women that I portray is Colleen, and she was a pipe inspector, and she spent her days inspecting pipe welds. That's what she did all day. When Oak Ridge was revealed as being a key part of the Manhattan Project, she knew that, but nobody came around and said, oh, by the way, Colleen, here's what your pipes were doing. So on the one hand, sort of the big secret was revealed, but there were many, many other aspects that remained secret and top secret, for that matter, for years to come. So it was kind of a gradual process that people realized specifically what they were doing. And as you said, if you were a chemist, you might be able to start to put two and two together and say, oh, I bet my part in this process had something to do with X. But, you know, for most people, they just knew that they had something to do with it, but not quite exactly sure what.
So with that said, the second part of my question is, how then were you able to find these women and get their stories, and how much did they ultimately know?
Well, I was able to piece together what their experiences were of value to me, whether or not they had a perspective on specifically what they were doing. So the first thing I did was physically go over to Oak Ridge, and I went there many, 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 many times. And I would interview women and just ask them what their day-to-day was like and what they physically did at work. Then I found them via, it's a pretty small community now. Oddly enough, it's about half the size of what it was during World War II. And I went to an assisted living center where contact had brought me to interview one of the supervisors of these women. And in the lobby of the assisted living center, I met two more women who had worked there during the war. And then they introduced me to their little coffee group that they go to every day. And there were a few more women there who had worked there during the war. And so everybody I met knew someone else I could talk to. And I talked to men and women, and I talked to scientists, and I talked to janitors. I pretty much talked to anybody who would, you know, take the time to sit down and talk with me. Now, when you found out what individuals were doing, Colleen and her pipes, for example, just by virtue of the fact that she told me which plant she worked in and which building she worked in, a lot of what that was and what role that played in the process had been described in, you know, many of the scientific books that had been written about the Manhattan Project. And also over the years, because that was 70 years ago, so they may not have known what they were doing in 1945 or even 1950, but the more time passed, the more they learned, especially those who were very interested in trying to figure out what it was that they were doing. So it was a combination of taking documents from the archives, taking scientific reports and books that had already been written about the scientific processes of the Manhattan Project, and then putting those together with the specific stories of the individual women that I tracked down.
One of the things that I was really struck by, and you include photos in the book of the billboards and posters that were found throughout Oak Ridge that said things like, what you see here, what you do here, what you hear here, when you leave here, let it stay here.
Yes, absolutely.
Your pen and tongue can be enemy weapons. Watch what you write and say. So was that, in talking to these women, was that a problem?
I wouldn't say exactly a problem. It was certainly startling to begin with, but it's also important to keep in mind that throughout the United States and in other parts of the world, the message of, you know, loose lips sink ships was pretty pervasive. So there was already sort of this idea in the United States during the war that, you know, you should never talk about your son's troop movements if he wrote you a letter about them. You should never sort of talk about the size of your factory. You're supposed to just sort of, you know, there was even an ad by the Stetson Hat Company that said, keep it under your Stetson. You know, I mean, it was everywhere, this message of maintaining quiet about what you did know about the war effort. So we take that, and then we just multiply it by 1,000 when it comes to the Manhattan Project. And for many women, you know, at first, and men, when you first came through the gates, I mean, imagine you're coming to this place, you don't really know the specifics of the name on it. If you look on a map, it's not there. And then you come up and there's a gate and barbed wire and dogs and guards with guns and people checking your badges and your pass because you couldn't go anywhere or get on that site unless you had permission to do so. And then everywhere you look was just these constant reminders, do not talk about what you're doing. Even if you don't know what you're doing, it was this idea that you don't know what you know. So just don't talk about any of it. And after a while, as it is with so many things, it just became normal. I mean, they saw these things everywhere, and in a way, it just kind of was just sort of part of the scenery after a while.
Denise Kiernan is author of the new book, The Girls of Atomic City. It is published by Touchstone. When you consider the work that they were doing and then that the government recruited these women for this work, what were they looking for? What was the government looking for in these women? Was it any specific skill set?
The government needed workers of all stripes for the project. I'll say that first, because when Oak Ridge specifically became, you know, in about 2.5 years, a town of 75,000 people using more electricity than New York City and with one of the nation's largest bus systems. So on one hand, the government needed everything that goes along with having a town that size: teachers, cafeteria workers, secretaries, dorm marms, bus drivers, everything you can think of. So they were recruiting for those positions and would look for people with the kinds of qualifications that would fit that bill. Then on the other hand, they needed thousands of women to work in plants like Y-12. And for this, they were very specific that they actually liked getting young women who they believed would follow instructions without asking too many questions. And they would actually go out and recruit at times from high schools. One of the women I profile was recruited right out of the halls of her high school shortly before she graduated. Another woman I profile had just graduated and was recruited out of the diner drugstore where she was working the counter. And so they liked the idea of having people who were smart and trainable. What they did not want were people who were going to ask a lot of questions or wonder why or how machines were working the way they were. And in fact, in one of the plants, there was an unofficial competition between PhDs from Berkeley and 18-year-olds operating these Calutron machines. And these 18-year-olds were from, many of them, off of farms in Tennessee. And the production rates were better for the young women from Tennessee because they did precisely as they were told, whereas the PhDs were very concerned with, well, what if I just tweak it a little this way? And I know they didn't tell me to do this, but I bet I can make it work better. The girls had consistently had better production rates. And this being a military operation, essentially, it was very, very compartmentalized. They were very focused on training people to do a specific job in a specific way and to know just enough to do that job very well. And that's all they wanted you to know.
Like any generalizations, this is probably unfair, but it seems as though in reading the book that these women were generally very proud of the work that they did.
I would say these were women who were proud that they took the time and energy to do something quite unknown to them, perhaps a little frightening, And they did it because even though they didn't know where they were going, they didn't know how much they were going to be, you know, relied upon. They didn't know the name of the town. They didn't know the specifics of their job. But the one thing that they did know and the one thing that they were told was that it was going to help bring an end to the war. Every woman I talked to, one woman had lost a brother at Pearl Harbor. Another one had two brothers fighting. Another one had one brother fighting. And for that generation, World War II really was the cause of the moment. So if you told someone, I know this sounds a little strange and you don't know where you're going or what's going to happen, but you're going to be helping bring an end to the war, that was enough for many of them. And they were proud of the fact that they helped with the war effort. Now, once it was revealed what they were doing, it's still challenging to process all that information. And they were in a position that many people in the United States were not in.
And also that understanding that, yes, it helped end the war, but what would the future ramifications be? And that they were working on something that was the greatest weapon known to man.
It was these were people who really straddled two completely different worlds. I mean, I don't know what it's like to grow up in a world without the knowledge of what a fallout shelter is, nuclear winter. These were phrases that didn't even exist when these women went to work there. And I don't know what it's like to grow up in a world without all of those things and my knowledge of what that means. And so the understanding of the ramifications, the fact that they had actually been a part of something that not only changed the course of the war, but changed the entire landscape of the planet forever, I mean, that was something that took a little bit of time to dawn. At first, you know, within the first days, the devastation was clear, and that was upsetting for some of the people. But the entire world was suddenly very happy that the war was over. But this new information, what is this strange cancer? Oh, well, we eventually will start calling that radiation sickness. And what is this? All of that stuff came in the months and years to follow. And so it all kind of sunk in a little bit gradually. And they came to realize they were a part of something very, very monumental and very controversial and very, you know, impactful.
And so in your opinion, what is the significance of a story like this today? What can we as a culture and as a society learn from these women, from these scientists, and ultimately even the politicians who are behind this incredible project?
I find it fascinating that it actually has taken so long to include enough of these stories of ordinary people who find themselves in circumstances that are anything but ordinary. The development of nuclear weapons, nuclear energy, nuclear medicine, everything stemming from this research, it was a watershed moment in history, and it is one that continues to impact pretty much everything we do today. And I think that because it is such a significant and controversial development, that we should really look at it from every possible perspective. And that means not just the perspective of the scientists, but also the perspectives of everyday folks. And I think that's very, very important for any moment in history, but especially one that continues to impact our economic, political landscape today.
When you think about I couldn't help in reading the book of thinking about how you were really fighting the clock on this, of getting these stories from women who were passing.
Oh, yeah.
And
sure.
And what challenge that held, and not only just the women but anyone who had really involvement in that project.
Exactly. That's it. And we were continuing to fight the clock on any stories related to the development of nuclear weapons, or specifically, and World War II in general. The youngest of my quote-unquote girls right now is about to turn 88. And, you know, there are others who are, you know, in their 90s. I lost one during the process. And they have such a valuable perspective, not just the women, but also the men who worked on it. I mean, anybody who worked on any aspect of this project, I mean, their perspectives and their information and their experience is so important. And when I give talks about the Manhattan Project or about the book, I always at the end encourage people, if you have, you know, a grandparent or, you know, a parent or an aunt or an uncle or somebody, and they have not shared their experience, sit down with a tape recorder, you know, get it to a library, get it somewhere. All of these experiences have value. And I encourage people to spend the time they can with anyone they know from World War II so that we all have, you never know who's going to benefit from that information.
It's such an amazing and revealing story. The name of the book is The Girls of Atomic City, The Untold Story of the Women Who Helped Win World War II. The book is published by Touchstone. Denise Kiernan, I thank you very much for your time. I appreciate
it. Thank you so much for having me.
Best of luck with the book. Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, the title is The Girls of Atomic City, The Untold Story of the Women Who Helped Win World War II. The book is published by Touchstone. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.